Oscar Bergenauer with Charlie McCarthy.
Now, Clippy Bergen, to help me, I'll mow you down.
It's Sunday night, and time again transcribed for Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy with Mortimer Snerd, Effie Clinker, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Ray Noble, Jack Kirkwood, the Bellow Men, yours truly, John Heaston, and our special guest, Hollywood correspondent Aline Mosby. And here they are now, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the day. I'd better be nice to Bergen. Christmas is on the way.
Oh, how do you do, Charles?
How do you do?
Yeah, I say, old boy, I have the most wizard Yuletide joke.
Yeah?
Yes, all you have to do is ask me. How come one of my shoulders is lower than the other?
Oh, and then you'll come out with a doozy, huh?
Oh, I will.
Fool that I am, I shall ask you. Well, go ahead, Ray. How come one of your shoulders is lower than the other?
Well, you see, old boy, it's my Christmas list. I just threw that one in for what it was worth.
Yes, by all means, ring up no sale. Or better still, ring up $10.
$10?
Yeah, that's what I'd like you to loan me before Bergen gets here, Razy. I need the money to buy Bergen a Christmas gift.
Oh, it's for Edgar.
Oh, yeah. I've been looking at things over in Snagwell's department store. You see, they have a monster sale on.
Say, old boy, do you think Edgar would care for a monster?
Folks, you've all heard the 16 tons. Well, he's the one they dropped it on. Oh. I gotta get money some way. Hello there, Charlie.
Oh, well, if it isn't my old pal, my old chum Eddie boy, old chum old pal.
You got color in your cheeks, looking a little younger. Your hair is getting thicker. You look like $1 million.
Really?
Well, after taxes, yes, I see.
Why don't you get to the point, Charlie?
Well, all right. I thought it might do some good to ask you for some Christmas money.
Little dreamer that I am.
Yeah.
Money?
Yeah, you said money. Yes, money, you know. Money. Ask for it by name. M-U-N-E-Y.
Yeah. I've already told you, Charlie, if you wanted money, to go out and get a Christmas job.
Yeah?
Yes. There's no greater pleasure than working for your money.
Uh-huh.
I feel that anyone who doesn't work isn't worth his salt.
I see. Has your food been tasting flat lately?
No.
I see this is going to be a great Christmas. No money, no presents, no laughs. And Santa Claus will probably ignore me again this year.
All right, all right.
I say, Charles, wasn't your Christmas tree loaded down last Yuletide?
Christmas tree loaded? You should have seen it. It was as bare as a fan dancer caught in a tornado.
All right. Now, just a second, Charlie. Those presents that you got last year, they weren't to be sneezed at.
No, to be sneezed in. Nothing but hankies, that's all.
But what hankies? They were expensive Swiss handkerchiefs.
When I got a cold, I want to blow, not yodel.
All right.
What a spender. Well, are you going to loan me the money or not, Birgit?
Well, of course not.
Oh?
No. I think work would be good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. If you ask me where the greatest contentment could be found, I'd say in a day's toil.
And I'd reply in a pig's eye.
All right. When I was your age, I would earn my Christmas money.
Oh, come now. When you were my age, Christmas hadn't been invented.
Oh, yes. Well, there must be some job you could do to get over the holidays that you can handle.
Well, I tried to get a job, and I went to one of those Christmas tree lots, you know. Never again.
What was wrong?
Some smart aleck offered $2 for me.
Oh, I see.
Really, Bertie, I tried to make money. I even tried selling some of my homemade candy.
No luck. Oh, you made some candy.
Yeah.
Was it good enough to eat?
I guess so. I tested it. I tried it out on my dog.
Yes.
What happened? He bit me.
Oh, he bit you?
Stuff just wouldn't sell. I don't know.
Just a second. After all, this is the holiday season, and I hate to see you so unhappy. I'll give you the money that you need.
You will?
I will, John.
Oh, you're a peach. You are an absolute peach.
Yes.
Minus the fuzz, maybe, but a peach.
Yes. Well, now do you feel better?
Yes, I do. And to show you my heart is in the right place, remember how I used to say that you were stingy, cranky, lazy, and untalented?
Yes.
Well, pick out one of them, and I'll take it back.
All right. Now, Charlie, I just hope that you'll behave yourself for the rest of the show.
Hello, Edgar. Charlie.
Well, it's Carol Richards. Well, my Carol, you looked lovely in that new dress.
Oh, thank you. It's just a little imported number.
Yeah, it looks like it didn't all get through the customs, so. Carol, you certainly must spend a lot of money on clothes, don't you?
This isn't an expensive dress, Edgar.
Oh?
Go ahead. Take a guess. What do you think it's worth?
About 90 days.
All right, no. Are you going to? Charlie, stop staring at Carol.
Me?
Yes, you.
Charlie, your mind is wandering.
Yeah, but look what a scenic route it took.
She is beautiful.
Yeah. No matter where you look at her figure, it sort of takes a turn for the better.
All right. Carol, I think you better sing before he goes off the road.
Bring me a bluebird with a happy song. Tell Mr. Bluebird things are going wrong. Tell him the lips I used to press to mine are tasting great from somewhere else's vine. Bring me a bluebird who will sing the blues. You're coming back and stop my crying blues. Tell the bluebird that you heard the sun is gonna shine and your lips are gonna meet again and feel so awfully sweet again with my.
Bring me a bluebird
with a happy song.
Tell Mr. Bluebird
things are going wrong.
Are going wrong.
Tell him the lips I used to press to mine I've tasted great from someone else's vine.
Come back, you bluebird.
And stop my crying blues. Tell the bluebird that you heard the sun is gonna shine. And your lips are gonna meet again. And feel so awfully sweet again. With
ladies and gentlemen, once again, it is time for the literary portion of our program, our Poet's Corner. It is with great pleasure and honor that I present our guest speaker of the evening. Here he is, the Poet Laureate of Abbey Rent, Professor Robert Louis Kirkwood.
Thank you.
Well,
yes.
Professor Kirkwood, how is it that you're always in such a happy mood?
Well, I owe it all to exercise, boy.
What kind of exercise, Professor?
Deep elbow bending.
Are you inferring that you drink to excess?
Oh, I'll drink to anything, boy. Oh, I'm just full of the holiday spirit.
Yeah.
Get it, holiday spirit?
Yeah.
That was your late an eggnog.
I'm afraid it did, yeah. But, Professor, it is Christmas time, and I guess you're quite busy, though.
Indeed. I'm busier than a beaver making a new coat for Liberace.
Yes.
You see, boy, I have to write the poetry for all those Christmas cards.
Oh, you write the poetry for Christmas cards.
That's right.
Oh.
Yes, here's a special one I just made up for Jack Benny. Merry Christmas to you and a Happy New Year, too. These holiday greetings come postage due.
Very touching.
Yes. And he touched me for five when I delivered them. Brother, he's as tight as I'd like to be. Boy, here's one of my personalized cards.
Oh, thank you.
This year we won't buy a Christmas tree. It's money in our pocket. We'll just give Uncle Herman a couple of drinks and plug him in the socket.
You do have a great talent, Professor.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it borders on genius. Just around the edge.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure our poetry fans are interested in just what your schooling has been to achieve such genius.
Well, I studied 4 years at Harvard.
I can believe that.
4 years at Yale.
Yes.
And 1 week at Vassar.
What did you learn at Vassar?
That I'd been wasting my time at Harvard and Yale.
Have you been writing poetry long, Professor?
Oh, yes, for many, many years. But I'll never forget my first poem. It was called Ode to a Peppermint.
Ode to a Peppermint.
Yes.
That is
awful. It told a very touching story.
Tell it.
It was about a one-fingered pickpocket who could only steal lifesavers.
In different flavors, I suppose.
Ah, well, that's very good.
It must have been beautiful. Professor, you certainly loaded.
Mm-hmm.
That is, with talent, that is.
Then you're right both ways.
Oh. Well, right now, I think it's time to hear your poem.
Oh.
Would you mind carrying on, Professor?
Not at all.
No.
I call this poem Ode to a Loved One. Farewell, close friend of olden days. Your warm caress I'll not forget. You comforted me in many ways, but now, grown old, you seem all wet. The hours you nursed me as I lay in illness on my bed of pain serve not to make you less passé, and all is over and in vain. Too soon you aged while I stayed young, and though you gave your life to me, such sacrifice must go unsung. It's been thus through eternity. Your once firm body had to sag, give way, and wilt. Alas, too bad. This is goodbye. Old hot water bag, I'm getting an electric pad.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I think that...
Hello, Edgar.
Well, it's Gary Crosby.
See, I'm sorry I'm late, Edgar, but I had a little trouble driving my car down Santa Claus Lane.
What happened, Gary?
I spent an hour waiting for a Christmas bulb to change.
We'll delay one.
Yeah,
but
goodness.
Now tell me, Gary, did you get all your Christmas shopping done?
Oh, I didn't do any this year, Edgar.
Oh?
No, for Christmas I'm giving everybody a copy of my new deck of record, Yaller Yaller Gold.
Well, I just can't wait till Christmas to get mine.
I was hoping you'd say that. Stand by and I'll give you a little peek here. The Mellow Men will join me. The river is long and the moon is high. I want a gal before I die. Pretty little gal with a turned up nose and dancing music in her twinkling toes. Oh, her lips is red and her eyes is bold. Her hair's like yaller, yaller, yaller gold. The color of yaller, yaller, yaller gold. I met a gal in Shawnee Town, twinkling toes and a dancing gown. She wasn't for me, and the reason is this. She busted my jaw when I asked her for a kiss. Oh, her lips is red, and her eyes is bold. Her hair's like yaller, yaller, yaller gold. The color of yaller, yaller, yaller gold. Next was in Natchez under the hill. Her loving sets me a-trembling still, but there were 26 kids in her family, and no one to feed them but poor little me.
Oh, her lips is red, and her eyes is bold. Her hair's like yaller, yaller, yaller gold. The color of yaller, yaller, yaller gold.
Last come a winter in New Madrid, smoking a pipe and a chawing a quid. When she puckered up her lips, I run from my life, but she run me down and now she is my wife.
Oh, her lips is red and her eyes is bold. Her hair's like yaller, yaller, yaller gold. The color of yaller, yaller.
Of my heart. Oh, that there's my melody.
Well, anything new, Mortimer?
Well, there is, yeah. Funny thing. I was lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucky me. On the way over here, I found a brand new pencil.
You found a pencil?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Thought you were born lucky. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do with that pencil?
Well, I don't know. It's too nice to go to waste, I guess, so I think I'll write a book with it.
Write a book?
Yeah. Yeah. They say any idiot can write a book. That's all it takes. I'm their boy.
Yeah. So you think you could become an author? I say, you think you could become an author?
Well, that depends on how hard it is to author.
Yes, I know. Do you have a flair for writing?
No, I got a pencil for writing, yeah. You can't write with a flair. Of course not, no. Unless it's for light reading, no. But outfoxed you that time, yeah.
Well, are you going to write fiction or nonfiction?
Well, maybe not at first.
I'll
work around to it later, yeah.
To what?
To what you said there, yeah.
Well, they say to be a great writer, you must have suffered.
No, yeah.
Would you say that you are qualified?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. When it's going to rain, I got a corn that hurts like crazy.
So now you're going to write a book. How about the locale?
What was the query?
Yeah. How about the locale?
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, no, no.
Where will your story take place?
Oh, right here on a piece of paper. I am.
Could you describe the heroine of your story?
Well, let me see. She's got two eyes, one on each side of her nose, yeah. Or is it the other way around? No,
maybe you ought to write about something you know, for instance. Maybe you ought to write about yourself.
Oh, you mean a horror story?
No, no, no. No. The book could be about your life. Now, where do you think the story of your life ought to start?
Well, I guess it ought to start when I was born.
When you were born.
I didn't amount to anything before that, no.
In a hospital?
No. We was poor, yeah. I was homemade, huh? I see.
Yeah. But what did your father say when he got his first look at you?
He said, no!
That's not possible.
That's the second thing he said. Oh.
A baby, were you?
Oh, a boy, I think. I don't know.
You were an only child?
Yeah, I was a very small litter.
Yeah.
Hi, Sarah.
All right.
Well, now, do you recall anything about your early days?
Yeah. My mother and father, they were sick most of the time, I see.
Why, what were they sick of?
Me. Yeah. You know, my father used to take me for long walks in the woods.
Yeah?
Yeah. And leave me there. And
what about your mother?
Well, most every day, Ma would come over and take a look at me and then go over and punch Pa right in the nose.
Your parents now?
I don't know. You know. I ain't seen my mother and father since they ran away from home. Or they... they couldn't take it, no.
Is your mother living yet?
I say,
is your mother living yet?
No. No, not yet. Not yet.
Every day. Now tell me, why is it?
Well, I'll tell you. When they was passing out dumbness, they throwed the book at me.
They certainly.
And now it's front and center for our wonderful vocal group, the Mellow Men, as they sing Arrivederci Roma.
Arrivederci Roma. Goodbye, goodbye to Rome. City of a million moonlit places,
city of a million warm embraces,
where I found the one of all the faces
far from home.
Arrivederci Roma. It's time for us to part.
Save the wedding bells for my returning.
Keep my lover's arms outstretched and yearning. Please be sure the flame of love keeps burning in your heart. Arrivederci Roma. It's time for us to part. Say the wedding bells for my returning. Keep my lover's arms outstretched and yearning. Please be sure the flame of love keeps burning in your heart. Arrivederci, arrivederci.
The Edgar Bergen Hour, transcribed with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richard, Jack Kirkwood, The Mellow Men, and Ray Noble will be back after station identification. From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sturd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, Ray Noble, and yours truly, John Heaston. Ladies and gentlemen, as a special holiday season feature of our show, we bring you some advice on how to throw a successful Christmas party. Folks, are your guests in pain when you entertain? Is your party a flop because what you serve is slop? Would you like to be known as the Pearl Mesta of Pomona, the Elsa Maxwell of Knott's Berry Farm? Then listen as your many letters and questions are answered by our perennial party girl, Miss Effie Clinker.
Thank you. Bless your heart.
Well, how are you feeling tonight, Mrs. Clinker?
Well, I'm fit as a fiddle and still looking for a bull.
I see.
I'm really a caution. One wagon going on.
Yeah. Well, that's a lovely dress you're wearing.
No, don't look so surprised. After all, I used to be a fashion queen.
Is that so?
Uh-huh.
You were a fashion queen?
Yes, I was voted Miss Loose Foundation of 1912.
Is that...
I used to have an hourglass figure, too.
Is that so?
Yes. Sand settled around 5:30, though. Yeah.
Well, that is indeed a great honor to be Miss Foundation of 1912.
It was then, yes.
Yes. And when you throw one of your famous parties, I imagine you wear a strapless evening gown, don't you?
No, I don't really.
No?
No, you see, with my figure, a strapless gown is too confusing.
Oh, it is?
Yes, it is confusing.
Yes. Yeah. What do you mean, confusing?
Well, on me.
Yes?
You can't tell whether it's a skirt that's crept up too high or a sweater that's slid down too low.
I... That would be confusing.
Yes, it would.
Yes.
And I don't like to mislead anybody.
No.
Actually.
Yeah. Our topic tonight is party advice.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yes. And one question many listeners have asked is, what is your favorite party game?
My favorite party game is a game called television.
Television?
Yes.
What is that?
Well, it's like post office, only there's more wrestling.
Oh, I see.
And then if we get along, we play telephone.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, it's the same, only better connection.
No idea. Now, Miss Clinker, several listeners have written in asking if you approve of dancing at a Christmas party.
Dancing by all means. I especially like dancing cheek to cheek.
I see.
From the head to toe.
Oh, yes. Where did you learn how to dance?
It was at a rumba club.
A rumba club?
Yes, rumba club. It was called the Tail Waggers.
The Tail Waggers.
I was a hostess there.
You were a hostess?
Yes. And I will say, I was quite a cupcake.
You were quite a cupcake.
Yeah. Until my raisins started coming loose.
I never did learn the rumba. Could you teach me?
Well, I could teach you how to rumba, sure. I learned all the rumba movements when I was a kid.
Oh, how's that?
Well, you see, I had a tricycle with a loose seat.
I see. Yeah. Well, I think we'd better get off.
Yes.
Miss Clinker, here's a letter from a listener. She wants to know what perfume you usually wear when you throw a party.
Well, you heard of that exciting, spicy perfume called Devastating?
Yes, I have.
Well, the one I wear is called Hello, Operator, Get the Police.
Oh, I... Well, now, this listener writes, Dear Miss Clinker, does your guest of honor sit on your right hand?
Heck no. How am I going to eat?
No, all right. Dear Miss Clinker, what do you do with party leftovers?
Party leftovers?
Yes.
I send them home in a cab.
Yeah, I...
All except the men, of course. If no one claims them after 30 days, they're mine.
Yeah.
I have some of the cutest wrecks around my house.
Here's another one.
Yeah, I'll take him.
No, I mean... Another letter.
Oh.
Dear Miss Clinker, do you think a girl should drink around men?
Mm, No, but then on the other hand, men usually make passes at girls who drain glasses.
Yes. I'm surprised at you, Effie. I didn't know you believed in drinking.
Well, I don't, but my doctor once told me that before going to bed, I should have a spoonful of cognac in a glass of hot milk.
I see. And how is it working out?
Well, of last night, I was about 2 years behind on my hot milk.
Oh, I see.
3 years ahead on my cognac.
Blinker, our time is up, and I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners. You know, to look at you, one would never think that you were so broad-minded.
Oh, well, yes, I am, really. I may have a Sunday school face, but I have a Saturday night idea.
I see.
Good night, everybody.
Gary Crosby returns to sing Don't Take Your Love From Me.
Tear a star from out the sky, and the sky feels blue. Tear a petal from a rose, and the rose weeps too. Take your heart away from mine, and mine will surely break. My life is yours to make, so please keep the spark away. Would you take the wings from birds so that they can't fly? Would you take the ocean's roar and leave just a sigh? All this your heart won't let you do, this is what I beg of you. Don't take your love from me. Take the wings from birds so that they can't fly. Would you take the ocean's roar and leave just a sigh? All this your heart won't let you do, this is what I beg of you. Don't take your love from me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our Meet the People department, we believe we have a very interesting guest for you tonight. She's one of Hollywood's most attractive and talented newspaper correspondents. Her United Press stories have made the front pages of most papers all over the country, and her column is read in over 1,500 newspapers throughout the world. I'd like to have you meet Aline Mosby.
Thank you, and hello, everybody.
Well, we're very happy to have you with us tonight, Aline. Maybe you can give us some real lowdown on Hollywood movie stars before the news gets into the papers, huh?
Oh, well, I don't think my boss would like that. I need all the news I can get. You know, it takes quite a bit to fill my 6 columns every week.
Well, now, isn't that a shame? And I thought we were going to get, you know, some real hot scoops, like who won the main bout at Ciro's last night, or what Cocker Spaniel is chasing after Lassie. I am not up on that.
Oh, sorry, Edgar, but you'll just have to read about it in tomorrow's papers, I
all
guess.
All right, I'll do that. What's the most outstanding story you've covered, Eileen, or one of them?
Well, let me think. My favorite, I think, was the Marilyn Monroe calendar story.
Ah, yeah. That was a real scoop. How did that happen?
Oh, there have been a lot of blind items in the local columns. You know, something like, what fox starlet posed for what calendar?
Yeah, with nothing on but the radio.
That's right. At the time, Marilyn never admitted it. Naturally, I wanted the story if I could get it.
Oh, naturally. Just like we wanted the calendar. Did you have to do quite a bit of snooping to get that story?
Oh, not exactly. Marilyn was just getting started on her acting career. And there was talk about her clothes. I remember she had one bright red evening gown that fit her like the paper on the wall. And had some of our local gossips bearing their claws. So I made an appointment to talk to her about clothes.
Well, how did you get around to the calendar?
We had lunch in the 20th Century Fox studio commissary. After I got the clothes story, I put my pencil down. Then I asked why she posed for the calendar picture.
And she confessed and gave you the scoop.
Well, she was new to publicity, and she thought that when I put my pencil down, the interview was over. So she just told me she'd been broke when she posed for the picture, and she needed the $50. When she read the story on next day's front page, she was terrified, thought she'd ruined her career or something.
Well, did she ever get over that?
Oh, yes. Later, she told me it was the best thing that could have happened for her career. It really gave her lots of publicity, which did her no harm, as it turned out.
No, indeed. As I recall, Eileen, you got your own share of publicity a couple of years ago when you covered the story of a nudist colony out near Apple Valley.
Oh, please, I'm trying to forget that.
Ah, yes, well, we all have a calendar in our life. It looks as if your specialty is getting the bare facts.
No, so true. Well, my boss sent me on that assignment, and I most reluctantly went. I knew that even a reporter can't get into one of those nudist camps without taking off all her clothes.
Yeah. Well, I've even heard that several of your newspaper pals were tipped off that you were going to do a story on the nudists and that they were all waiting for you. Is that true?
Oh, true, true. I tried desperately to carry off that assignment with poise and calm dignity. But the woman press agent of the colony later told me that I looked terrified all day long.
Why didn't you just carry a large notebook?
Oh, I wish I'd thought of that.
Never a dull moment in the life of a Hollywood newspaper woman. I suppose you've gone on lots of those fantastic out-of-town junkets that we read about.
Oh, yes, the craziest was the one RKO arranged last year for the premiere of that Jane Russell picture, Underwater.
Yes, of course. I recall reading that it actually was held underwater, too.
Oh, that's right, Edgar. The studio flew us to Silver Spring, Florida, and they gave each one of us a bathing cap, an oxygen mask, an aqua lung, eye goggles, breathing tube, waterproof watch, a ballpoint pen that actually wrote underwater, popcorn even, and, oh, yes, a bathing suit.
Well, of course. That wouldn't bother an old nudist like you, though. Well, Eileen, after writing stories about Hollywood personalities for 8 years, you probably have quite a few peeves, haven't you?
Well, mainly I dislike insincerity and dishonesty. Mm-hmm. I'd say one of my pet peeves is the person who gives you a story and then denies it when he sees it in print. Or the star who tried so hard to get publicity when he was on the way up, and then he cries for privacy after he's made the grade and demands that the press leave him alone.
Then you don't believe that a star is entitled to a private life?
Well, no, I don't. Not really. If a man or a woman chooses to be in a profession that needs public approval, then he or she owes the public an obligation, in my opinion. A star like Marlon Brando, for instance, he wishes some privacy. In some ways, I respect that. Yet he's never rude in trying to hide his private life.
Well, now, what is about the special likes in getting stories?
Well, I like honesty. There are a few stars who always try to give an honest, frank story and not hide anything from you. They're very rare, people like Humphrey Bogart, Betty Davis, Zsa Zsa Gabor. But of course, Edgar, you know there are many, many things about this business that I do like, and I suppose I wouldn't change it for another, even if I could.
You know, Eileen, you certainly make your work sound fascinating. I'd be tempted to become a newspaper man myself if I could take time out from Charlie, Mortimer, and Effie and the whole gang.
Oh, better not, Edgar. You've got a pretty good racket, too. Good night.
Good night, Eileen, and thank you for being on.
Now, back to the musical department of our show as lovely Carol Richards sings, No Arms Can Ever Hold You. Our forum of intellectual titans tussle with the nation's health problem as they discuss the subject, whither medicine. Ladies and gentlemen, Edgar Bergen and his end table.
Thank you, and good evening, panel.
Hiya, Buster.
Crazy, Daddy-O.
Gentlemen, before we start, there is something I want to say.
Well, as the farmer said to the hen, unburden yourself, boy.
That's a perfect example of what I mean. Your conduct on this panel is simply terrible. Tonight, I must insist that you watch yourself.
Well, I can't do that.
And why not?
It makes me cross-eyed.
Now, let's get on with our topic for tonight, whither medicine. Now, I'm sure that we all agree on the importance of increased medical knowledge as far as our health is concerned.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely, old boy. Oh, yes, oh, yes, yes. Yes, an uncle of mine's a perfect example. He's troubled with shooting pains, and the doctors don't seem to know what to do with him.
Well, take it from me, boy. All your uncle needs is a few shots of bourbon.
Bourbon? Will that stop the shooting pains?
No, but it'll sure ruin their aim.
You know, me
maybe your uncle's got the same trouble as my Grandpa Snerd has.
Oh, really? What's wrong with him?
Well, I'll tell you, he just had an operation and the doctors left a sponge in him.
Oh, how terrible. Does he have any pain?
No, no pain, no. But he gets awful thirsty.
No, Ray, your uncle's trouble might be his appendix.
Well, in that case, maybe you'd like to send him a copy of my new book, one I've just written, How to Take Out Your Own Appendix at Home in Your Spare Time, or What to Do Till the Undertaker Arrives.
I say, oh boy, look, how are you qualified to write a medical book?
Why, I went to medical school, boy. I'll have you know I graduated with Dr. Scholl.
Oh, is that so?
Of course, he was at the foot of the class. Yeah. Oh, we're getting corn plastered tonight.
Really, if you were a doctor, have you done any surgery?
Oh, certainly.
Uh-huh.
I operated on one fellow for appendicitis, but he died.
Well, how come?
He had measles.
Kirkwood, I'm beginning to think that you're a pony.
Oh, now you hit me where it hurts, boy.
Well, how could I miss that target?
Oh, well, back to Slenderella.
I'm ashamed of you, Kirkwood. You are a quack. That's what you are, a quack.
You mean he's got web feet?
No, I don't mean that at all. I mean he's underhanded.
Oh, underhanded, yeah. You ought to be good at milking.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. See, if you're a doctor, Mr. Kirkwood, maybe you can tell me why I got a stomachache.
Well, for a slight fee, I shall be glad to give you a perfunctory examination.
Well, there ain't nothing wrong with my perfunctory. Stomachache.
Now, just open your mouth and stick your tongue out.
Yep.
Now, further.
Ooh.
No, further.
Ooh.
Much further.
Well, that's far enough. You want it to come off the roller?
Doesn't look just right.
No.
Well, it's obvious that this patient is suffering from streptoarteriothromballoneurosciatobronchorheumatitis.
No!
There's only one thing to do.
What's that?
Look it up in the dictionary.
I think, you know, I just heard about a new drug. It's called sulfathiazepeptobenzohydroethermethylodiaphenothermobarbarin.
You mean sulfathiazepeptobenzohydroethermethylodiaphenothermobarbarin? How does it work?
You really want to know?
Well,
well, by the time you're through asking the druggist for it, you're cured.
Thank you, young Dr. Moron. As far as I'm concerned, the only worthwhile medicine is my own Dr. Kirkwood's health elixir.
Oh?
It's 90% alcohol.
What's the other 10%?
Who cares?
Please, we're discussing the wonder drug. Now, what about antihistamine?
Well, what about Uncle Julius?
Yeah. I think it's time for my medicine again. One conclusion I think we can make is that the wonder drugs have done much for our nation's good health.
Oh, yes. Well, now you have something there. Speaking of good health, you know, the last time I saw my Uncle Julius, he was 96 years old, and there was a glow in his cheek.
There was?
Yes, yes. Yes, old boy, his whiskers were on fire. you do get it, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you're all over it.
Yes.
Oh, where's my medicine?
Again?
Now, one of the great medical advances has been specialization. I think we should discuss the various fields, such as pediatrics, neurology, dermatology, pathology, radiology, orthopedics, obstetrics, and gynecology. Now, Mortimer, would you like to collaborate?
No, I feel pretty good now. You do it.
Their sons to be doctors.
Yeah.
Mortimer, what did your mother want you to be when you were a baby?
Dry.
Dry. I shouldn't have asked. Now tell me, Mortimer, how is the medical situation in Snerdville? Do you have a good doctor?
Yeah, there's Dr. Jenkins. He lives two houses away at the Mar Farm.
Yeah.
Three houses if you count. Well, it's really just two houses.
Yeah. Nice to have the
the doctor so close.
Yes. Yes. Yes, how about that?
Well, especially since I'm going to have a baby.
Oh, I see. That's ridiculous, Mortimer. You can't have a baby.
Oh, yes, I can. You see this folder here? It says all I got to do is join the Blue Cross, and they do the rest.
In your head.
Oh, you've been peeking.
Yes. Yes, I am, right through that hole there.
Well, let me see. Let me see.
Panel. I'm afraid you've all been neglecting your intellectual development here. Now, take me. My mind is always ripening.
Naturally, it gets the full sun all day.
Well, that does it. There's the buzzer. Good night, everybody.
Mr.
Bergen, well, mister, what do you want, Charlie?
Oh, nothing at all. Don't you think it's time to get back to the subject of Christmas presents and things like that, Bergen?
Why, Charlie, what would we do without your gentle hints?
I don't know.
Of course we should talk about Christmas presents and right now.
Yeah.
How about you, John? Have you any ideas?
I sure have, Edgar. Friends, for your Christmas gift cigarettes this year, why not give new, gentle Philip Morris? Surely, gentleness is never more welcome or more appropriate than at Christmas time. And when you give today's Philip Morris, you are giving a package of 200 wonderful samples of gentleness, all done up in a smartly decorated special Christmas carton. This Christmas, give Philip Morris.
Have a gentle Philip Morris made gentle for you.
And now, here is Edgar Bergen.
And now it's time for another bit of sage advice from our rural philosopher, Mortimer. And here he is with Snurge Words for the Birds.
Electric lights don't burn as bright with kerosene. Thank you.
Thank you, Mortimer. And until next Sunday, good night, everyone.
Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Smith, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble next Sunday at the same time. Tonight's Edgar Bergen Show with Jack Kirkwood, Carol Richards, Gary Crosby, and the Mellow Men was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Pierce. Script by Cy Rose, Hilda Black, and Zeno Klinger. This is John Heaston speaking.